Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Tampa. Main event. Both fighters on weight, despite what you may have heard. Joanna Jędrzejczyk taking on Michelle Waterson. The Boogie Woman taking on the Karate Hottie, which... hopefully we can keep Joe focused for this podcast on a fight breakdown rather than Michelle Waterson, who enough said there. Here to break things down, all 14 fights of this massive card. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. The show, it is Chris Olsen and Joe, also goes by Sun Tzu. Guys, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. Last week, I remember you talking up this card and didn't really give it a second thought, but in preparing for this, yeah, there are a lot of fights I'm actually interested in here, and a lot of fights where, I feel like there's significant value to be had. So I like a couple dogs on this card, maybe not as many dogs as I've liked in the past, but I like them very strongly to the sense where I feel like they could be even money or even small favorites. So I'm excited about it, ready to get started.
One of them, I think you're crazy, but I actually like some dogs on this card too. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a solid card. There's not too many wow, oh my god fights like Masvidal and Diaz, but it's a solid fight card. It's a fight fans fight card. Joe, how you doing? And I know you got some news for us.
Yeah, I think the last time we had a 14 fight card was the Arizona card that was headlined by Gaethje Poirier. I love these 14 fight cards. We almost lost the fight. Mike Davis stepped up for Brock Weaver, so we have 14 fights.
And created instant mega line value.
Yep. I actually posted my bets. I made some bets. I posted them on Twitter. I am all in on JJ here. We'll talk about that when we get to the fight. I'll give you my reasons why, but I have her by finish. I have the under 4.5 rounds. I've got a couple round prop plays out there so far. I've sunk $1,300 just into JJ bets, and I'm thinking up in that. The news that Sean was alluding to was the infamous and closely followed Battle of the Pods. I would like to say that the RotoWire crew here was competitive, but that would be a lie. With the real Chris Olsen and myself bringing up the rear, DFS Army finished in third. However, it was a hotly contested race between first and second. Rotor Grinders edged out the Dark Horse Fantasy Alarm by a whopping 4.5 points. You know, Chris and Gravy Cakes actually tied. They tied, believe it or not. And then, Mike Buddha so came in sixth. So it was, they really came in fourth, fifth, and sixth, although they tied for fourth. The two Fantasy Alarm guys actually finished on top of them, but the third guy didn't score enough points to make up the deficit. So we have it wasn't a great card for really anybody scoring-wise.
No.
It's funny. The winning score was like 830 versus 825.5, and that's with three guys. Like, normally that would not be a great score for two guys to have. So
I'm really confused here. I thought we had won.
No. How?
Six. Because Marley scored 80 more points than anybody else.
I don't think so, dude, unless I did the math wrong.
I'm gonna real quick do this math here.
I don't think you guys won.
I'm sorry for everybody listening, but I need to...
Controversy yeah. Brewing, guys.
I did quick math.
No, I could be wrong, too. I looked at the numbers, and I'm like...
Me, Marley, and Eric F. combined for 846 points.
So then you won. You sure?
Yeah, because me and Eric sucked it up. We scored in the 230s.
I just looked at how bad you guys did, and I assumed there was no way you could win.
We scored 460, but Marley scored 378.
Okay, so there you go, guys. I apologize. Right. It was DFS Army, Rotor Grinders. I mean, we still finished last. DFS Army, Rotor Grinders, and Fantasy Alarm. Yeah, embarrassing performance. I finished last out of all the players, so that was fun. Okay, moving on.
DFSArmy.com.
There you go.
Coach Sniper.
I know that all you guys over at Army had the Spivak pick, right? You guys were all good with that.
Actually, what helped is Marley. We all put in GPP lineups. Is how we decided to approach it.
Uh-huh.
So we also got the points from DeCastro.
Right.
Is ended up really being who kind of pushes over the top, but. That's probably enough intro because we have 14 fights to get to on this card. I will say a podcast brought to you by RotoWire. Go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. You can like, comment, subscribe to this video on YouTube under RotoWire. Subscribe on the iTunes platform, RotoWire MMA, to listen to a replay of this. We record Fridays at 8 o'clock. What's up to everybody in chat? Appreciate all your guys' support. Have anything you want to add, throw it in the comments. We will get to it. And that being said, let's just start talking fights here as we have a lot of them. And the first one is not good for DraftKings. It's just not. J.J. Aldrich, 8,900, taking on Lauren Mueller at 7,300. Aldrich, favorite, -160. Mueller, +150. Joe, it's a women's MMA fight, so you can start us off.
Yeah, this is anticlimactic. I mean, I know our good friend Kyle Marley likes to play the first fight of the night because he thinks it gives him some leverage. But I don't even think Marley can find something to like about this fight.
Yeah, he actually can. I can't give it away though.
Yeah. Look, I think Mueller. I think JJ at 8.7. There's just so much value. Like maybe on a lesser slate, I might have some interest in JJ, but. At 8.7K, I mean, Mueller is still raw. I mean, she's going to bull rush. I'm going to have so little exposure to this fight. It's really not even on my radar. I mean, I've only made a handful of lineups, but I haven't included either fighter in any of my lineups so far. And I'm not sure how many lineups I'm going to play. I'm going to give JJ Aldridge. I think she's more technical. She's got way more experience. You know, she's going to be a little undersized, I believe, here. I have not seen the weigh-ins, but I believe she's going to be undersized. So that's one thing. If she gets bull rushed by Mueller maybe can hurt her. But I just think all around game, JJ Aldrich is better. So I'll pick her for the win, but I don't love it as a DraftKings play on a slate where there's a lot of value.
I 100% agree. So, Chris, give us the contrarian opinion.
Well, I would like Mueller here, but I would contest something fundamental that Joe said. I don't think she does quite bull rush anymore. I think that fighter that we saw in the Contender Series did bull rush. But I think lately, I mean, she still has her forward pressure, but she seems to stand and wait way too much for me. And I actually think that, look, I know that it's hard to roster JJ at 8,700. I would never contest that. But 8,900, even worse. But
oh, 89, damn.
I think this is a terrible matchup for Mueller, quite frankly. I think that she's just going to get countered all day long by JJ. I think that if she was somebody to really push in the clinch and make this dirty, she'd have a better shot, but I really don't think that is what she wants to do. Again, I think JJ is really going to have a lot of counter opportunities. Wouldn't be surprised if she really stings her hard more than once with just how open Mueller gets with her striking. And something else to note is that we've seen Mueller hurt very badly to the body in two consecutive fights now. Now, JJ doesn't do a lot of kicking, but she can still punch to the body. She can even game plan around that and throw some kicks, because once is fine, twice is especially for a fighter like her, who hasn't taken a lot of damage, is something to be concerned about. I think that JJ, this is a much better spot to bet, and I have a very big one on this month's Gamble Master. But yeah, I think that if you want to make maybe a couple of lineups with her just for a major leverage play, I think it's okay if you're making multiple lineups, because I think she has a lot of advantages here.
Moving on, let's talk Marvin Vettori, 9,500, taking on Andrew Sanchez at 6,700. Line on this fight, Vettori is -345. The comeback on Sanchez is +315. Look, I'm picking Vettori, but Sanchez is live, and I like him in a ton of formats, because I think the issue is, I think he is a very underrated fighter, but he's underrated because of the giant hole in his game, which is his gas tank. This is going to be a close fight for as long as he has gas, and I think that's a round and a half. I think Vettori pulls away, but grappling upside, I think he's underrated. Fight is likely to see the scorecards according to Vegas. So I like Sanchez as a punt here. I think he's less formal, but I am still picking Vettori. Chris.
Yeah, I'm picking Vettori too. I don't like Sanchez quite as much as you guys. I know that when this fight was first booked and canceled, everybody was pretty bummed, because they said, and the prices haven't changed, at least I don't think they have. From what I can recall, they haven't changed. Because everybody said, oh, Andrew Sanchez is the wrestler, Vettori, even though he's not a better fighter, he's live with the grappling. And he still is, and I wouldn't contest that part. But what I would say is that I think that, number one, Andrew Sanchez has made a conscious choice not to wrestle quite as much as he used to because of the gas tank issues that you mentioned, Sean. And even in the last fight, which I actually thought he lost, he got a decision there. But he was actually, you know, kind of – Barrow was kind of just having his way with Sanchez in the clinch there and stuffing a good number of those takedowns. And Vettori is a big, bricked-up guy. I think he can have a similar – kind of success rate here. I think he can stall Sanchez out a lot and sort of wear on him and sort of take the fight where he wants it. So I wouldn't have much Vettori, because Vettori has shown us he's not anything close to a finisher. And so for this price, it's really tough. But, you know, I don't really see a lot of value in Sanchez here. I take a couple shots for the wrestling in 6,900, of course. That's an option, but I feel like people are going to be way more overweight to that than I am, because I'm just not really feeling it.
Joe.
So I think Sanchez is a fairly solid cash play. He's got a good floor. You know, he does have, who would be shocked if Sanchez actually won that fight, wins this fight, which begets the line, which I honestly, you know, don't understand at all. I'm not sure what Vettori has done. I mean, please don't tell me it's the Adesanya narrative that is causing, you know, Vettori to get all this love. I can't see that at all. You know, what makes Marvin Vettori -345? I mean, what in his record screams 7-2 favorite over You know, a guy that's got more UFC experience, who's 4-2 in the UFC. I don't see it. I think this line should be much closer to pick, personally. And look, the knock on Sanchez has always been his cardio. So if he ever gets that under control and fights a more measured fight, I mean, is there really that much that separates Marvin Vettori from Andrew Sanchez? I don't think so. I'm going to give a lean to Sanchez. I'm going to give a lean to Vettori here, but I think this is a really, really close fight. You've got a guy coming off of 2 wins in Andrew Sanchez. Ugly wins, yes, but I think it's a pretty solid 4 here for Sanchez. I like his price. I will be underweight to Vettori. He's way too expensive here. So, yes, I'll give a slight nod to Vettori, but I do think there is cash value in Sanchez.
Moving on, Miguel Baeza, 9,400, taking on Hector Aldana at 6,800. Baeza, the favorite in his UFC debut, minus 215. Aldana, plus 195. Aldana has shown he is not good. Baeza, young, unproven, making his debut. Two guys who generally like to throw and see finishes in their fights. Joe, how do you have it going?
Yeah, I have to believe that Aldana, you know, did the UFC a favor. You know, I'm not sure why he's on this Tampa card, why he didn't fight on the Mexico card. You know, he's coming off of 3 losses, if you count his loss in the Ultimate Fighter Latin America. He really hasn't fought a lot. I mean, he's had 3 fights since 2015. You know, against Kenan Song, he got knocked out in the second round. You know, he was the hot play against Laureano Strapoli and got boxed up. It was considered a fight of the night. Got 50K for that fight. I think he actually did the UFC a favor taking that fight. Strapoli was the local guy. And now he's fighting Baeza. So, you know, I hate laying big numbers on debuting fighters. However, we're talking about a 5-inch height advantage that Baeza is going to have. I don't know a lot about his camp. I don't know if either one of you guys do. But he is considered a prospect. He's 27 years old, 6'2", 74.5-inch reach. Camp is MMA Masters. Again, don't know a lot about the camp. You know, won a decision on the Contender Series in June of this year. Other than that, his record, like, for a 7-0 fighter, it's okay. I mean, he's got a lot of finishes, but, you know, he also has a split decision against the 5-4 guy. So I'd say be cautious here. I mean, I would say that this is a guy the UFC probably wants to promote, but I don't think it's a gimme, and he's priced pretty high, you know, and his number's pretty high, and we've been burned by guys like this before. So, yeah, I'm going to pick Baeza to win, but I'd say watch out. He's far from a free square.
Chris?
Yeah, I basically agree. I think that The Aldana thing is, look, yeah, he took that loss to Strapoli. Nobody was expecting it, but then again, the very limited tape that we had on Strapoli at the time, he was like a countering kickboxer, and then he came out, and all of a sudden, he's this guy who just throws and throws and throws. Now, it is true that Aldana has had trouble with rangy fighters before, not just Strapoli, but others as well. But my problem with Baeza is he tends to get backed up a lot. And even in that Contender Series fight, you know, he got landed on quite a bit. Now, you might think that Aldana is a guy who gets hit a lot, and he got hit a lot in the Strapoli fight, of course. If you look at his significant strikes against, it's like 5-something, which isn't great. But if you look at his striking defense, it's like 62%. And that's because I think he's actually – pretty decent defensively. I think Strapoli threw a lot, and so he landed a certain percentage of that, of course, but I think he made a miss more than I think was evident on television, and I think that him marching a guy like Baeza down is going to pay dividends here. Again, the range does bother me, but I have to give a slight lean to Aldana here just because I just don't like that he's going to get backed up against the fence against the guy who throws very hard, is accurate, can wrestle a little bit if he needs to. It's mostly a power slam game, but it is there if he wants it. And so, yeah, that's my pick. Slight lean Aldana, but I do think the range is a bit trouble.
Yeah, I think Aldana's live to a KO and not much else. Moving on. Marlon Chito Vera, 9,100, taking on Andre Yule at 7,100. Chito is the favorite in this fight. Be great if I could find the lines. You know, they shuffled the whole bout order. Best fight odds is just for in terms of ordering fights.
I mean, I could give you the DK lines. That the DK lines are usually a little off, but he's -167 on DK.
-150 on wow, that's a low number. You got some -150 Vera. Comeback on Yule is +140. Chito, when he wins on DK, tends to score big. But it's a slow starter typically, outside the first round submission of Brian Kelleher. So how do you have this one going? Chris, we'll start with you.
Yeah, this is one of those lines that I think should be a little closer. Look,
closer than it already is?
Yeah. Chito Vera, as you might be able to tell, I'm taking Yule in this fight. But Chito Vera, when he wins his fights, the past four or five fights, he's had a bad first round, and then he's turned it on just with crazy pressure in the second and has gotten his opponent out of there. Aside from the Frankie Stein's fight where he basically had the entire fight, but that's generally not how it goes. A guy like Andre Yule is way too athletic and powerful to just be overcome by a second round barrage from Chito Vera. He's not buying it. I think that Andre Yule is a better striker. I think he's faster. I think he probably has a little bit more power in his hands. Chito can use his wrestling game. We always talk about that Yule is not a good defender of takedowns, which is true. But I would submit he has a good get-up game and a good jiu-jitsu defense game that we have seen on display in multiple fights now. Fights, in fact, where people thought he would lose because of the jiu-jitsu disparity. He didn't, because he was able to fend it off and get back up to it. And I think if Vera gets in a hole in round one, I think he's going to find it much more difficult to come back than he did against a guy like, Guido Canetti or Uli Gibran or guys like this. So I'm going with Andre Yule. I think he's going to be overlooked here. I think people are riding high on Vera right now. And I think Yule gets this done. So that's the play.
Coffee McGee, what do you got?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I am concerned about Vera, you know, seemingly starting slow, taking a round off. I mean, he has recognized that and mentioned that. I believe he's training at Jackson Wink. I've seen him make improvements in each fight. I like him. I like his evolution. I think that, this is a pretty decent matchup for him. We've got Yule, who's coming off of a decision win against Anderson Dos Santos. Okay. He got choked out by Nathan Wood. And he beat the former shell of Renan Barão in a, split decision. So
a fight that nobody expected him to win, by the way.
Well, look, dude, he was only a 155 dog. So it's not like
Barão was still a public darling.
Yeah, I get it. So again, I'm on Vera here. I don't know how much I like him for DraftKings, though. I mean, I do think that, you know, that Frankie Sainz win was a good win. He did what he was supposed to do against Hernandez. Canetti is kind of, a guy that they keep under a pane of glass and break him whenever they do a card in South America. Ouija Boren, that was a good KO. Again, I really like the way he's evolved. I'm going to go with Vera here. I'm just not sure how much I like him for DK. There's just so many choices at that price point that I'm not sure how much I like him in DK, but give me Vera for the win.
Davison Figueiredo, 9,300, taking on Tim Elliott at 6,900. Davison Figueiredo, -175. The comeback on Tim Elliott is +165. Joe, how much are people going to roster Tim Elliott because he once scored 170 points against Luis Smolka?
Yeah, I mean, that's a narrative that's long since passed. I mean, there are a literal plethora of narratives surrounding Tim Elliott. Okay, let's start with the obvious. Nearly a 2-year absence due to, his knee getting almost totally destroyed. I think if there was a ligament that could be broken or stretched or strained, that it happened to Tim Elliott. So he's had a 2-year recovery. Here's another interesting narrative. He was actually asked in July if he wanted to take a fight, and he said he was still recovering. So, okay, so yeah, we're 3 months, if by my calendar mathematics, you know, we're 3 months away from July. So how much more in 90 days could he have recovered if he wasn't ready for a fight in July? You know, the other thing is he moved to Las Vegas, you know, after Tuff dumped the mother of his child and went to Thailand to party. And that was the rumor behind, you know, why he did not look good against Ben Tan and got choked out in 15 seconds. So, you know, from that respect, I'd love to see him get clocked. I think that he's worth a flyer in case you see the Tim Elliott at all of old, but coming off of a surgically repaired knee, off of a 2-year absence, you know, moving to Vegas, hanging out with Gina Mazzani, I just don't know, man. I'm going to go with the more active fighter here. Christ. Oof. Yeah, I guess I'm going to take Yule, though. I see this line should probably be even a little tighter than it currently is.
Figueredo, you mean?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Figueredo. I'm sorry. The line should probably be a little narrower because we know what Figueredo's, you know, his kryptonite is takedowns. And if Elliott is strong enough to work his takedowns and his knee doesn't give out, you know, I'm going to go. I could see it being a long night for him. However, you know, be cautious. Look at, you know, for those of you guys that watch Invicta, Shino Van Hoos, one of my favorite fighter names, you know, came back off of a knee injury last week, and it only took one kick to the knee before her entire knee folded up. So, you know, these are the type of injuries. We saw it happen with Anderson Silva. I don't like guys coming back off of knee injuries. So there's more. That's more narrative for me to go with Figueredo.
I just think Figueredo is a solid prospect too. And if Pantoja couldn't control him on the ground, I have a hard time seeing Elliott doing it. Elliott's going to be all about the grappling.
And Formiga dominated. I mean, he scored 7 points. His floor is pretty low, I have to say. I would not look at him as a cash play. I mean, if you're going to play, I mean, look, Elliott's worth a punt, but I mean, don't think you're going to, you know, 7 points kind of should not play a fighter in cash. You scored 7 points in a decision.
I think you can find better places to go in cash than
today. True.
I like Figueredo a lot. I like his power in this one, actually. Chris, fight breakdown.
Well, yeah. I don't think the proper question is really, can Tim Elliott hold down Deiveson Figueredo? Deiveson Figueredo. That's right.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really the question. I think the question is, can Figueredo out scramble Tim Elliott? And I don't think that he will be able to. I think Elliott's going to be a little quicker on the ground than Figueredo is. I also think that Figueredo, I mean, look, for all this talk about, look, if you take him down, he's got great jiu-jitsu. I mean, when Jared Brooks, rather, took him down, the only thing he tried to do was hop on those opportunistic guillotines, you know. So he hasn't shown me like a world of jiu-jitsu from his back where I think, well, even if Elliott takes him down, it's going to be bad for him. I don't think that's the case. I like his power too, and I like his pressuring, and I think he could fluster Tim Elliott into a lot of bad shots, and I think that could be something if he could use his weight, maybe sprawl him out. Do some things like that, but Elliott is definitely live here. The knee concern is well spotted by Joe. That's a good point, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But if we're talking about guys under the 7K barrier, I like him much better than somebody like Andrew Sanchez. I think he's got a work. Well, for one thing, he works his takedown game a lot more than a guy like Sanchez does now, and I just think he's got more more very apparent advantages here than a guy like Sanchez. So I think I'll give a slight edge to Elliott here as far as who wins the fight. But as far as DraftKings, I pretty much agree that Elliott is floor and ceiling, and Figueredo is basically just ceiling.
Two analysts against me, but we'll move on to a fight that is not good for DraftKings. Talk about Max Griffin at 8,200, taking on Alex Morono at 8,000. Griffin is still the favorite in this one, minus 130 now. Morono plus 120. Chris, fight breakdown.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that terrible for DraftKings. I think that we've seen a guy like Max Griffin work his wrestling to great effect and get points that way. One thing I really like about him for this fight is a use of a sharp jab, which I think is going to be really effective against a guy like Moreno, who just basically tries to come in and throw these really wild haymakers at you. I think even in the Zach Otto fight, like, I mean, everybody expected him to pulverize Zach Otto, and that first round was very close before Otto dove headlong into a guillotine against a much better submission artist. And part of that was a jab, a body kick too was getting through. But Otto is a decent boxer with a good jab, and he was using it, and it was landing. I think Max Griffin can do much the same thing, except Max Griffin is also a better combination puncher than a guy like Zach Otto. Morono is just never a guy. Never a guy I feel like I can trust. I feel like on the feet he's just too wild, looking for big shots, and on the ground, I think Max Griffin is going to be a much more careful grappler than a guy like Zach Otto is. I think that Morono might beat him there if he got the advantageous position, but he doesn't wrestle anyway. So barring a knockdown or a sweep, it's hard for us to predict that. And we saw Jordan Mean out wrestle him pretty comfortably. So I think maybe it's just the quality of wrestler and the caliber of jiu-jitsu guy and how careful you are and so on. So I actually like Max Griffin quite a bit here. He's the play, and I don't think he's a horrible DK play because I think he's got various ways to score points here. I still think the wrestling is active, and we know how good it can be, and we know how effective it can be on Morono when used well. So, yeah, give me Max Griffin in a fight I actually kind of like for DK.
I'm picking Griffin as well. But I think Morono is the one who's live to a knockout. I'll have a couple of stabs at him. The issue isn't Max Griffin himself. He could score 80, 90 points in a win. But in that range, I mean, we got to talk about all these great GPP fights coming up. There's places I'd rather go. Joe.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything Chris said. I like Griffin a fair amount here as well. I think that he offers some line value at his price. Give me Griffin.
Moving on, the short notice replacement, Mike Davis. He's the favorite. He's 8,600, taking on Thomas Gifford at 7,600. Here's your chalk line value of the card. It keeps going up. Mike Davis minus 290, Gifford plus 260. As long as Davis's gas tank holds up against Gifford, who's just going to keep coming and coming because he's a pressure fighter who likes to get hit in the face a lot. As long as his gas tank holds up, I think Davis wins. I think the line is right. And the DraftKings salary is one that everyone's going to take advantage of. I think he's bordering on a free square. Jeez, bordering on a free square on cash game. So I like Mike Davis a ton in this fight. Joe?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say a ton. But, you know, Griffin, I mean, look, he's very experienced. He's got a lot of fights under his belt against, you know, a fighter with definitely an athletic advantage. In all honesty, I haven't really thought about Davis for cash. That's kind of an interesting, I mean, short notice replacement. DraftKings did go out and post the salaries prior to the line actually dropping. Remember, Mike Davis is replacing Brock Weaver here. I was going to pick Davis to win here. I hadn't really thought about him as a cash play. I mean, I am concerned about how green he is. I honestly kind of see him as a finisher bust kind of fighter here.
But -300 at 8,600.
Yeah. I mean, and he's going to be very popular and very highly owned. I mean, I just go back to my caution narrative where, you know, especially recently, we've been burned by guys making their UFC debut coming off of, you know, the Contender Series. I mean, look at actually, this is not his UFC debut.
Yeah,
he fought
Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, he fought Gilbert Burns. But, I mean, like, look at Patello last week. I mean, that was a disappointing fight. You know, so, yeah, I'm going to pick Mike Davis to win. I don't know if I'm confident in him as a cash play as Sean is, but I certainly get it at minus 300 at 8.6K. I just don't think I don't think Guilford's all that bad. He's got, you know, he's kind of a he's got some moves, and he's got a lot of experience. So If this goes to the decision, I don't know whether you're going to get salary out of Davis.
Chris,
I think Gilford's is kind of bad. I don't even say that. It's weird because I don't even want to demean him as a fighter by saying that. I sort of like the fact that he's all push forward and work great, and that length really helps with that kind of style as well. But the thing about Mike Davis, he's not only like a really good and powerful striker with those in combination, he's also a wrestler, and I believe he was a college wrestler as well. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's true. We didn't see any wrestling in his Gilbert Burns fight because Burns is probably, if not the better wrestler, at least the stronger guy, and he was able to body lock him and take him down at will. Gilbert Burns to Mike Davis, that is. The one thing about Mike Davis is that when he tries to brawl, he tends to leave himself open, and that could be a little bit of a concern. Not that I think Giffords is all that much of a counterpuncher. I really don't. But this is one of those fights, man. Like, it's easy. It's conceivable, I'll say, to see a path where Davis loses here. He's taking this fight on short notice. He gets tired. He gets roughed up, and then he loses the fight. I mean, it kind of reminds me of I don't remember their names, so I'm not even going to try. But it kind of reminds me of the capoeira guy that everybody loved, and the guy who came in and just put the pressure on him, tired him out, and won. That was a couple weeks ago.
Molesky.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he was knocked out by Jingling, right?
Kind of reminds me. Who's that?
Zaleski DeSantos, right?
Yeah, I think he ended in knockout. I think.
Yeah, Jingling knocked him out.
No, I'm referring to I said capoeira, the guy who does all the crazy flips in the ring.
Oh,
and
Marcus. No.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah. The guy who knocked out Danny Roberts. Yeah.
Michelle, yeah. Exactly. Yes. So yeah. I get a little vibe of that here, but what I'll say is that Giffords is probably, in fact, definitely much more hittable, which is a concern against a big, powerful guy like Davis. So this is a lot of words to say that I basically agree with you guys.
I'm going to cut you off here.
Yeah, okay.
We have just reached the halfway point of this card. Ryan Spann, 8,800, taking on Devin Clark at 7,400. Spann the favorite, -155. Come back on Clark is +145. And I get to take Chris's role. I'm taking the dog in this one. I like Devin Clark a bunch here. Mm-hmm. I think he can get a takedown. I think he can use his grappling game, get takedowns, pressure, close the distance, gets a longer striker. A la the fight me and Joe watched in Brooklyn against Mike Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. My concern with Devin Clark is what the concern always will be, is if he catches one on the chin, is he going to stay conscious? I think he does and can. I think he's, more durable than I thought he was early in his career. And just the grappling, I think, is going to be an issue here for Ryan Spann. So I think Clark is given the small edge to Clark to pull the upset. Chris.
Yeah, see, I've always liked Devin Clark. I can't pick him here, though. But here's the thing I was thinking about. Like, when was the last time Devin Clark fought somebody as rangy as this? Because usually he basically
Mike Rodriguez.
Well, Mike Rodriguez. I was thinking of
Rackett.
On Alexander Rakic, right? That's what I was thinking of.
Rakic and Spann are different fighters. Rakic is legit.
Yeah. Well, no,
Rakic is a world better than Spann right now.
Sure, but what I want to underline here is the way he approached that fight, which is just sort of trying to flurry in with strikes and hope to catch him, and that led to a nice counter on the chin, which finished that fight. I really think Spann is a good prospect. He's got nice combinations he throws in. He can throw that short little uppercut lee that he floored Nogueira with. He got a good jab. He's very big for the division. I just like a lot of things about him. And Devin Clark, look, he's a wrestler. That's pretty much all he has. He's got an overhand and he's a wrestler. Can he get his takedowns and win? Sure. But I would have to see him control a guy like Spann for a significant block of time before I can pick it. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pick Spann here to win by knockout.
Joe.
Yeah, see, I like Clark a bit as well. I mean, I believe he changed camps prior to his last fight, and I think he went to Elevation. Someone in chat, like, let me know if I'm right or wrong there. You know, my biggest concern here, and I was very impressed with, you know, Stosic was a hyped prospect coming into that fight, and I think Clark pretty much schooled him. You know, I like it. He's got wrestling pedigree. My big issue is what he's giving up in size. I don't know how Spann makes 205, honestly. He's 6'5". He's got an 81.5-inch reach.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Yeah, so Clark is giving up 5 inches in height and, what, 6.5 inches in reach. That worries me a little bit. He also trains at a good camp in Fortis. So I do like Clark a little bit. I think his floor, unless he gets knocked out in the first round, his floor is decent. You know, I think Spann, if you're playing mid-range GPPs, you should probably have some lineups with Spann in them. I think, you know, if I'm looking at Clark versus, say, Sanchez, or even Cub Swanson, I think that Sanchez probably has a better chance of not getting finished. You know, so unless you're thinking Clark is going to win, I think Sanchez's floor is safer. And he's cheaper if you're looking for cash play. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Spann. I do like Clark a little bit. I was impressed with how he fought last time. I will have a few shares of him in GPPs. But give me Spann here.
Moving on, we have Eric, your boy Anders, 8,500, taking Gerald Meerschaert at 7,700. Anders minus 130, Meerschaert plus 120. I get to do it again. Give me the dog. Give me Meerschaert here. I always love targeting MMA fighters versus guys making the transition late to MMA. I also think this is a bad matchup for Anders just in terms of grappling submissions, right? This fight hits the ground. He's in trouble. Meerschaert is actually a little better, bigger than Anders, it looked like during weigh-ins. Anders has the raw athleticism advantage, and he could finish Meerschaert way better. I think he's more power, probably the better striker. But I think at some point, Meerschaert, this fight hits the ground. We've seen he's durable against Kevin Holland. And I think I like him to get the sub in this one. So back-to-back dogs for me. Chris, you weren't on my last dog play. You on this one?
I am heavily on this one. This is one of the fights where I feel like the wrong guy might be the favorite. I like Meerschaert a lot. I'm sort of fascinated with him more so than anything. I just love how he just drags everybody he fights into his world and sees if they can hang. And more often than not in the UFC, they haven't been able to. I think that, look, I know that Anders can obviously can finish Meerschaert, but Meerschaert's a tough guy, man. He went through about a round and a half of Thiago Santos beating on him before he finally had to give up the ghost in that fight. I think that for me, Eric Anders is sort of weird. You mentioned the transition to from football there, Sean. I feel like he's a guy who doesn't know what kind of fighter he wants to be, or at least he doesn't really have a coherent game plan when he steps in there. Against a guy like Santos, he tries to do nothing but wrestle. Then in his next fight against Khalil Rountree, against the guy who has shown a significant deficit of wrestling, he doesn't try to wrestle at all. I just don't feel like I can trust him. He's a pressure power striker with very low output. I think that Meerschaert is going to have multiple opportunities to get in close and tie up with him and do all the great things that he wants to do, tire him out. Maybe this ends by sub, but if not, I just think that we're going to see a very tired Eric Anders and a victorious Gerald Meerschaert. And at the dog play, again, an unjust dog in my opinion, I feel like it's a kind of a no-brainer, so I'm going Meerschaert.
Joe?
Yeah, interesting, because I mean, I view this fight as, you know, sort of a toss-up myself for the reasons that you both described. I mean, you know, Anders has the athletic advantage. Unfortunately, he seemed to be overly active and probably took some fights that he shouldn't have taken. You know, I'm not putting any stock into his last win. I mean, come on, that was, you know, that was a gimme fight against probably one of the worst, you know, MMA guys in the UFC. You know, if he didn't finish him in the first round as a minus 325 favorite, I would have been interesting, you know, but prior to that, he had lost 4 out of his last 5 and did not look good in his win against Williams prior to that barely legal head kick. So I don't know here, man. You know, Theodoro has a way of making everybody look bad. I mean, he was just dominated by Roundtree. And if Mearshart watched the Roundtree fight, I think what he does here is he keeps him at bay with kicks, because that obviously worked for Roundtree, and then gets him to the ground. And that's his world, is getting him to the ground. I mean, kicks and getting him to the ground. I'm also going to take the dog here. I think this is a GPP fight. I wouldn't play it in cash, but you know, give me the dog.
Kicks is a good – I just want to say one more thing. Kicks is a very good observation, Joe, because that's how Mearshart finished Eric Spicely, if we remember. So
yep.
That's definitely something.
Yep.
It's something. Luis Pena, 9,000, taking on Matt the Steamroller Frivola at 7,200. Pena minus 170, Frivola plus 160. I think the line on this fight is off. Give me a third straight underdog. Give me Frivola here. And really, I think the hype is up on Luis Pena. I do think he's talented. I just think this is a bad matchup. I think that Frivola is going to be able to use his grappling. Yeah, you're going to tell me if you're picking Pena, guys like Steven Peterson couldn't really do it. Frivola's a better grappler than Steven Peterson. I think he's just going to bring a grinding type of fight that Pena's just not going to be okay with. He's 3-1, but beaten up on cans. The best fighter he fight is fought was Mike Trezano, who handled him pretty easily in a decision. Beating up guys like Matt Wyman and Richie Smullen, and just not doing it for me. Big step up here. Give me Frivola to pull the upset. I think this line is too wide. Joe.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on Frivola here. You know, once you know, you got to get by that flash knockout by Paulo Reyes. Yeah, exactly. Violent Bob Ross is not knocking anybody out. You know, do not buy into him as a minus 380 favorite against the ghost of Matt Wyman. You know, I don't see it. You know, Peterson, yeah, he came back with a nice win against Martin Bravo with a spinning back fist that, you know, put 50K in his account. You know, but again, I'm not yet impressed. I mean, he's a freakishly tall fighter at 6'3". You know, Frivola's giving up 6 inches of height, but he can be taken down. I mean, he'll probably get up, but if I was Frivola, I would just wear him, and you know, grind out a decision. You know, obviously at his price point, 7.2K, you know, that's very, very attractive. Give me the dog here.
Chris.
Yeah. I understand why people like Frivola as a dog, but I just don't see it here. I think, first of all, Sean, to your point, or to contest your point, I should say. I mean, I don't think the jury's quite out on Frivola that he's not a scrub. I don't know why that would necessarily be the case. In that Jalen Turner fight, which he won by his grappling, Turner really hit him with some big shots there. So I don't think that the Paulo Reyes knockout is a fluke. I just think that he was able to use his wrestling more effectively against a guy like Jalen Turner. And I think that you guys
did against Venata too.
Well, Venata's a scrub.
I
knew that was going to get a reaction, which is why I said it. But it's true. I mean, can the guy win a fight, please? Anyway, I think that you guys are both overlooking something here, which is the jiu-jitsu of Luis Pena. I feel like I don't know for a fact that Frivola is a better jiu-jitsu guy. In fact, if I had to put money on it, I would say probably isn't. I like the length of Pena here. I like that he uses the jiu-jitsu and those Kimura locks to fend off takedowns and put himself in better positions. I think that Pena is better everywhere. I mean, aside from straight wrestling, of course, Frivola would be better there. But I think in every other area, Pena is the better fighter, and I think that the last rangy fighter Frivola fought in Turner, he just had to basically try to wade in with big overhands. That's not going to work on a guy like Pena, who keeps his range better, in my opinion, and is just a better fighter overall than a guy like Jalen Turner. So give me Pena to do some damage and potentially knock out Frivola. And I know he's going to be popular, so I think he can be a real nice scarcity play at the favorite price.
I just, the one thing you didn't mention is the struggles Pena had against the grappling of Trezano. And Frivola, if he can stop the takedown, I think you're right. Frivola eats too many shots. Agreed. I just don't think Pena can. So that's what we're going to find out on Saturday, I guess. Moving on to a fight I can't wait to talk about. Because, Joe, I think you've gone a little crazy in the narrative here. I think you've gone too far.
I've come back to the center line, Sean.
Mackenzie Dern, 8,300, taking on Amanda. Is it Amanda? Yes, Amanda Ribas at 7,900. Dern, the favorite in this one. Minus 140. Comeback on Ribas is plus 130. Mackenzie Dern made weight. Had a baby 4 months ago. The way she looks after having a kid 4 months ago is insane. Somebody on my Twitter posted, or just ever, and agreed. I mean, she's attractive, but if you are close to anyone who's gone through childbirth, just, you know, sister, wife, whoever, like 4 months, that's crazy. I saw her interview. She was back to Muay Thai in 4 weeks and rolling jiu-jitsu 6 weeks. It's crazy. So this fight, I think, you know, Ribas, another black belt. I think people are still underestimating how good of a jiu-jitsu practitioner Dern is. There are levels to black belts. I think Dern is on a whole other level on the feet. Yeah, Ribas a little more technical. Dern throws harder. Hey, remember, Chris, Mackenzie Dern has power.
I was waiting. I'm surprised it took you like a whole 2 minutes to bring that up.
Mackenzie Dern put down Amanda Bobby Cooper. I'm not saying it's going to happen here. It's just something to worry about, kind of that waiting forward to get a takedown. I think just Dern, more tools here. This fight will hit the ground. I just think her jiu-jitsu is that much better. But, Chris, I know it's your turn, but we're going to go to Captain Narrative here first because I know he wants to talk about Mackenzie Dern and being kicked out of MMA lab and all that good stuff. So now that I've hopefully stolen all of his thunder, Joe, you still picking Amanda Ribas?
Yeah, I've come a little bit back since I've watched her make weight. You know, I honestly, if you gave me even money, I would have said that she didn't make weight.
Somebody on Twitter had I can't remember who it was. I wish I could. Might have been the fight gambler. I can't remember who it was, so sorry in advance. Best tweet is could have been MMA trader. Either way, sorry. Is that Mackenzie Dern never really had a weight issue? This is just if you don't care about making weight, you never had an issue.
Yeah, I mean it was actually priceless. Her going to the buffet like after stepping off the scale, like missing weight by 7 pounds or whatever. Yeah. So my issue with Mackenzie Dern has always been her motivation. As a fighter, I mean, the last thing you want to hear from a young fighter after a fight is, I want to go spend time at the beach. And she did. And she got knocked up by a surfer, you know, and I don't believe she got married. Not that I care one way or the other. What?
Wish I surfed.
Yeah, me too. You know, so that's kind of like not what you want to hear from a young fighter early on in their career. It's like, yeah, I can't wait for what's next. I want to continue to learn. You know, and then getting kicked out of the MMA lab. Now, my understanding is, you know, the surfer dude, her boyfriend was there and, you know, that might've been one of the reasons. But you know, her whole work ethic is what I have an issue with. This is the most rounded fighter that she's fought. This is the most credentialed fighter in, holding a black belt in both Brazilian jiu-jitsu and judo. Now I know the argument's going to be, you know, Mackenzie Dern is maybe the greatest of all time in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Okay, that's fine. You know, I'd like to see how she performs here. I think this is a fight that, oddly enough, you maybe want to get some exposure to. You know, it's a women's strawweight fight, which, you know, with a few rare exceptions, you don't always say that. But I certainly, you know, could see this fight being really interesting. And I just think that, you know, although Dern has power, she is not technical in the least. Ribas is more technical. She looked good in her first fight back coming off of USADA. And I only expect her to look better in this fight. So I, you know, look, and there was a lot of money that came in on Ribas. You know, I don't know if I would recommend betting her at this number. But, you know, I did like her. You know, when I first saw the lines come out on the DK Sportsbook, it looks like Ribas is plus 120. You know, there's certainly some line value here for Ribas. I'm still going to pick Rivas to win, but I'm not nearly as confident as I was a week ago because, you know, Dern has looked good. She's made weight. She looks in shape. I don't know that she's actually improved at all. So if you're betting Dern, you're betting on her to win based on her strength, which is her, you know, BJJ on the ground. I just don't know that, you know, Amanda Ribas is that far back being a dual black belt herself. So give me Amanda Ribas at the price, although I will have a few shares of Dern.
Chris?
I have to say, MMAKO making me laugh in chat saying that maybe she's going to acquire a surfer accent. Now all I can think about is her post-fight interview with, you know, it was a tough fight, brah. That fight was so tough, brah. So
with the Brazilian translator.
Yeah, that's right. And giving us one of these things too. But yeah, aside from that, look, as much as I would love to pay against Mackenzie Dern to get some revenge for my girl ABC, I don't think I can do it here. I was all ready to pick Rivas, but I noticed that although while I think that if she did strike exclusively, she would have a much better shot. I love her kicking game and the fact that she can go to the body and her pressure, but it occurs to me that she wants to clinch a lot. That's her game, and she wants to look for takedowns. And I still have to assume that that's Mackenzie Dern's world. Just one quick note about has she improved? I would say that she has improved as a striker. I'm not here to tell you that she's Shaman Moraes now, but I do think from her first fight where she was basically just windmilling to her second one where, you know, she didn't do a whole lot, but at least she was efficient. She had actually the strike that put Dern down was actually kind of nice. She faked the jab and came in with the overhand and caught her. So I'm not here to tell you that she's a great striker by any means. Obviously, still not a better striker than Rivas, but she's doing what I think a good coach will tell a specialist to do, which is just get very efficient and do things that you're good at to lead into the game that you like. And I think that she's got that down. I'm anxious to see how she looks on the feet now. I just can't trust that Rivas isn't going to turn this into a grappling match, and if she does, I have to pick Dern, so that's where I'm going.
Chris, how about using as an example a fighter that hasn't been cut by the UFC?
I can only go by what we have here.
He said she's no Shaman Moraes. Moraes has been cut.
Israel Adesanya. Go ahead.
Does that make it? No. I have to answer that charge because that's a silly comment because
even, it is?
Yes, of course it is. He was cut, but is he still not an awesome Muay Thai striker? Well, like, what difference does
obviously
that
not. I mean,
I wouldn't say awesome.
I don't know, you guys. I'll send you guys some videotapes.
Nico Price, is 8,400. James Vick is 7,800. Price is the favorite, -145. Vic up at 170, finally at +135. Nico Price, kill or be killed. So love it for GPPs. How do you have this one? I'm going with Price. Chris?
Yeah, I can't trust James Vic against anybody who's going to pressure him, and that's all Nico Price is going to do. If James Vic could deal with pressure a little bit, I would take him because I think he's the better boxer. And probably the better jiu-jitsu guy, although Price is sneaky. Price is sneaky there, so maybe I wouldn't totally concede that part. But I think that Nico is good enough to take a shot if he has to get one to get in there. And once he's in there, I think it's his fight. And it's just really hard to trust James Vick coming off of what we've seen recently. I don't think he's absolutely dead here. So if you wanted to take a scarcity shot on him, I would get that. But Price does get hurt. But I think that this is just a fight that Price wins because it gets into his wheelhouse a little bit too much. So I'm taking Price by sadly another finish for two, I should say, James Vick here.
I'm not sad about it. Joe?
Yeah, I think this is a great GPP fight. I mean, I certainly, you know, obviously if Price can get inside, he certainly should be able to finish. James Vick, you know, we've seen it, you know, one, it's interesting because for a guy that tall, for a guy who should fight at range, you'd think he'd develop some head movement. You know, because that's, you know, he had that great winning streak.
His head moves when it bounces off
the canvas. Yeah, when it bounces off the canvas. Yeah, I knew that was coming. I think it's a good GPP fight. I mean, you know, Price is not a great fighter. He's an entertaining fighter. He's a scrapper. You know, if Vic all of a sudden decides to get technical, I can certainly see him winning here or maybe even catching him in a submission with his, you know, incredibly long limbs. You know, he was tall for, you know, 155. He's still tall for 170. I'm going to pick Price to win, but I definitely see this as a GPP fight. And, you know, give yourself a share or two of Vic just in case. You know, you don't see him this cheap that often. But give me Price for the win here.
Co-main event time. Cron Gracie, 8,700. Cub Swanson, 7,500. Cron, the favorite. I know Chris loves that Cron's a favorite. He's minus 170. Cub Swanson is plus 160. Cub Swanson's getting taken down by the likes of Artem Lobov. Lost four straight, but it's silly not to think he's live. I will say that. I'm picking Cron, but Cub Swanson's been around a long time. Awkward striker, and Cron's still unproven. So, to me, Cron is... He's fallen to this week's Maki Patolo to me. Big upside, but God, I can't trust him in cash. Too big of an unknown. But I am picking Cron to win. I do like him in GPPs. Joe.
Yeah, so what I found really interesting here is our friends at Vivisection, Zane Simon and Connor Rebush, they don't look at lines before they actually make their selections. They look at lines after they make their selection. So both of these guys picked Cub Swanson to win. And when they saw the lines, they were shocked that Swanson wasn't the favorite. And that had me thinking. So I did a little bit of research. And, you know, Cron Gracie's wrestling is not good. I mean, he has to essentially get a hold of you and make you, you know, force you into a mistake, you know, to get you to the ground. You know, his offensive wrestling is not good. I'm going to pick Cub Swanson here. I think he is so far a superior striker that it would negate his disadvantage. Although, you know, Cub is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's
choked constantly, though.
I know. Look, he said he thought he was going to die when he got choked by Ortega. You know, I'd like to think that Cub has enough left to win a striking battle here. I do think this is a good GPP fight. I will have some shares of Gracie. This is a GPP dog play that I'm going to take based on, you know, my guys at Vivisection opening my eyes to a few things. Would it shock me if Cub got choked out in the first round? No. But I'm gonna take a flyer on Cub at 7.5 for the win.
All right, it's gonna be 2-1 for Swanson. So Chris, tell us why Cub Swanson is going to put Cron Gracie in his place.
Well, I think you're right. You alluded to it. I do think that this fight should basically be a pick'em. I think it's silly to have a guy who can't fight MMA be a favorite at this point. I mean,
even though I'm picking Cron, I Swanson's plenty live. Let's be
clear. Oh, yeah, of course. And I think that, like, I agree with Joe, of course. His wrestling isn't good. But what you have to remember about Cub Swanson, which should make you nervous if you're picking him, it does for me, is that, look, Brian Ortega didn't need a takedown. He tied up with him. He wrapped the standing guillotine, and that was the end of it. Also, the anaconda that he got before that, where time expired, he didn't get a takedown for that one either. So that's got to make you a little nervous, where a tie-up can just lead to a sub there. But I think that there's literally no way for me to pick Cron Gracie here. I can't pick a guy who can't strike at all and doesn't wrestle to win an MMA fight. I just can't do it. Can he win? Sure he can. I think there's a good chance, and I'm certainly not telling you to avoid Cron Gracie in DraftKings, but I can't see myself picking him. I think that Cub should be able to use length and use those kicks and get the job done. So He's the pick, but I do have to note one really strange thing. I was talking about Sean before the broadcast. Run to your local books or online or wherever you go, guys, because Chrome Gracie by sub is +100. It's even money. And there's literally no other way that he wins. So if you think Chrome Gracie wins, don't bet Chrome Gracie. Bet the sub prop because it literally makes no sense not to.
I totally agree.
But yeah, that's so the play is the play is Cubs Swanson based on my view of how the world works, basically. But well,
speaking of how the world works, like every Chrome Gracie fight I have to throw in, that my biggest issue with him is the dude is weird, like beyond weird. He's a flat earther doing weird breathing shit for his open workout. He's just a strange, strange guy, and I can't fully embrace someone who's still a flat earther. Can't do it. The world is round. That's how the world works. Where was I? Oh yeah, main event time. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, 9,200, taking on Michelle Waterson at 7,000. Jędrzejczyk -335. Comeback on Waterson +305. Five rounds of striking is what we should see. Joanna lands over six significant strikes per minute. Waterson is hittable. I know she's going to try and be on the outside, but I'm all about JJ here. Waterson doesn't have the grappling, enough grappling to keep Joanna down. Like, as long as Joanna's anywhere close to what she was, I think the weight cut issue was actually a mind game, is kind of my thought. I'm more skill for skill than narrative. She made weight just fine, even if you want to look into the narrative. I'll have some Waterson, because 7,000 is a good price. Don't mind a stack in cash games. Yeah, give me Joanna Violence pretty much all day in this one. Chris?
Yeah, me too. I think that, look, I have to admit that I underestimated Waterson in the last fight against Kovacevic. I thought that Kovacevic
was shot.
I thought her forward pressure would be enough. It wasn't. She just actually showed good evasiveness, good strike selection. But against JJ, that's basically her whole game is movement and shot selection. And I think that's just going to win the day here. And I would be shocked if Waterson gets a head and arm throw off on JJ. I just don't see it happening. So I'm gonna have to go against Waterson again. I just think she's got too many things going against her in this fight. I just don't think she's going to be able to get the wrestling going, the judo, whatever you want to call that. And she's obviously the inferior striker. So give me JJ for probably what amounts to a very high volume decision.
Joe.
Yeah. So where I strongly disagree with both you guys is I would be completely shocked if this went the distance. Let me tell you why. There's a number of reasons why. First of all, Michelle Waterson has never gone the distance in a five-round fight. Never. She's made it to the fourth round once. That was 6 years ago against Jessica Penne in her atom weight Invicta fight, right? So she has never come really close to five rounds. And the one time she has, it was 6 years ago at atom weight. She was destroyed by Rose Namajunas. She was dominated in the first round and choked out in the second round. By the way, that was the same card that Tim Elliott scored 175 points on. I love Michelle Waterson. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that little like kicking video that she did was really cool. Joanna is coming off of, a number of losses. Having a decision win against Michelle Waterson is not going to be enough to get her back into the mix at 115. So how am I playing this? I've got Joanna +333 to win inside the distance. I got under 4.5 rounds +200, just in case Waterson maybe does something, gets her in a choke. I don't see it. I've played around with the Joanna wins in round one and Joanna wins in round two props. And I've got a fairly significant straight bet at what I think is fantastic odds. If you've got Joanna and Vittori at similar odds and you're not betting on Joanna, you're nuts. So I've got Joanna. I got a fairly significant bet. I'm probably going to go in and do some more. I'm looking at some parlays. But I would really, really be surprised. Worst case, I'll break even on my plays if when all is said and done, if Joanna does happen to win by decision. But I love her at 9.2K. She should be the highest priced fighter on the slate. She should be 9.6, 9.7. She should be in like cyborg territory here. But I, Joanna with five rounds to work with, even though it's not going to go five. I love Joanna here. I think this is the time for her to make a statement. She has to. So give me Joanna all day, every day, cash, GPPs, straight wagers, inside the distance. That's it.
Joe, did you say Waterson has never gone to a decision?
No, I said she's never gone five rounds.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, she's gone to decision a lot.
Okay, I was going to say. The
last time she even went four was 6 years ago at Invicta.
Fair enough.
Yep. My favorite comment in chat, and I think it's really true, as much as I love Joanna, Vince says Joanna's one loss away from Antonio Brown crazy. She's getting kind of screwy. Like, all right, guys, edge play time.
Hot takes.
I gave you my hot take. I'm done. I mean, I gave you a plus 333 wager. That's a lock. I don't know what more of a hot take you can get than that.
So that's Joe's hot take. Chat, give me some hot takes. Chris, you got one ready to go?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a three-dog parlay here. It's going to be Aldana, it's going to be Mearshard, and it's going to be who's the other one? Oh, Cub. There you go.
All right.
I like one of those three.
Really? Oh, that's right. You're not well, but you even said you could see. I mean, live, but you don't think Cub is ridiculous, though.
No, okay. I don't think it's ridiculous. hot take for me. Let's say that's not really a hot take.
Can I just lay down some law here? I love all you guys, but intentionally silly hot takes. We don't play that here, so. Sorry, John, but
no, I love that.
It was no. Come on,
I love that's not real. Mackenzie Dern by first round flying knee.
All right, we got Sean has. We have no standards on this show, apparently, but that's all right.
No, I mean, look who the analysts and hosts are. It's
true.
There's clearly an issue.
That's, I walked right into that one, I guess. But go ahead.
To get to my hot take, is it a hot take? I want to say those three straight dogs in a row are going to win on the card, but I won't do that. I'm going to say, okay, the main event, because I disagree with Joe, I think it is going to go to a decision. I want to get a little crazy. I know for you, we're going to say over 275 significant strikes landed total between the two. I think it's going to be see, that's silly. I was trying to do something crazy, and Waterson just doesn't pressure like Andrade did to eat all those strikes. I take that back, guys. And now I'm going to say Devin Clark by ground and pound TKO. All
right.
Clark to knock out Span. It's not hot enough for you?
It's fine.
Wow.
I'll just marginally accept it.
Feeling very, very judged.
come on, give me something else. Go crazy. Come on. I gave you three dogs. Joe gave you his crazy, crazy thing.
All right. I don't know what it pays. Actually, hang on. I can find out what it pays. You pull up best fight odds here, and we'll go. Let me click off a couple of my dogs who I think are going to win here that I've already covered. So let's do my parlay. I will give you Devin Clark, Gerald Mearshart, and Matt Frivola, plus 1301.
So I'm surprised. Like I appreciate that Chris gave a three dog parlay, but Chris, I would have hoped. So if the plus 333 is not enough for you guys, and you want to make 34-1 on a parlay, you take Mackenzie Dern by submission plus 120. This is on the DraftKings Sportsbook. Kron Gracie by submission, minus 106. Nico Price by knockout, minus 110. And JJ inside the distance at plus 3-3. That plays 34-1. So if plus 333 is not enough for you guys and you want to make a few extra bucks, there's a 34-1 parlay. It's got a pretty good chance of hitting.
Yeah. I like it. Let's it's some of the viewer ones. Let's see. Vince Mueller scores 90 points. Whew. I mean, I guess if you can get JJ down, sure. Let's see. So I'm scrolling through here. Will Tuska, two under 7K fighters win. I like that one. I think there's a couple live ones. Something about Timo Pakkilin giving Chris shit. That's pretty funny.
I know. Well, look, I take it as a big compliment. I think people are so shocked when I get picks wrong. They're like, they can't believe it.
Which
I agree. I'll do better in the future, guys. No wrong picks.
I like this one. Geronimo, Nico Price versus James Vick ends up in a technical decision. He's so bad after a foul. That's the one thing we haven't seen lately is a technical decision. A fight stopped after the second round for to go to the cards because of a foul. Like, we're due for that.
Yeah.
I really, really like that one.
Will asks if we have to technically be in Jersey to play on the DK Sportsbook, and I think the answer is yes.
Right? It's New Jersey and West Virginia.
Yeah. Okay. And West Virginia too. All right.
So that's what we got for you guys for UFC Tampa. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Give all of us a follow on Twitter. I'm at the DF Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu. Guys, good luck in your contest. We'll see you next week.
Cool.